Ladies and gentlemen, this is the World Series of Politics, where Brendan Bussman and Brant Iden race through the turn on key legislative and regulatory developments around the gaming world. As these two come up to the green flag, let's get into this race for expansion and opportunity for the industry to grow until we hit the checkered flag on another episode of the World Series of Politics.
Welcome back to the World Series of Politics podcast. I'm your host, Brant Iden, along with Brendan Bussman, who is finally getting to experience some actual warm weather. It's nice, it's balmy, it's humid. You're enjoying Puerto Rico, no doubt, right?
Well, this is my cool week. And I say that saying you and I last week, when I was in Vegas for literally a day, had dinner. Which was obviously at wonderful Piero's at the Monkey Bar, as we always love to.
And
next week I'm in Dubai. So this is my cool week as I travel the world, and I have a nice breeze. There's sun. Yes, it's a little bit of humidity, but it's under 90 degrees. So it's a great day.
It is a great day. I will tell you, it was hot even for me. That 117 degree heat in the desert was hot, and I usually don't complain about it, but it was warm. It was great catching up. I know we always threaten on the podcast to do one of these together in person. We will do it at G2E. We keep telling the audience we're going to do it. I mean, we get together and then we don't do it, but I promise you folks, we are going to record one of these in person, and G2E is our goal. So we're working on it.
You can sell some tickets.
We could. We'd have to make sure that tomatoes were not allowed though in the venue.
Well, we have got a great show. Of course, Keith White, world-renowned responsible gaming expert. Thanks for coming on. A good friend of both myself and Brendan Bussman. And, you know, we want to talk about there's some new studies out there these days. There's some new things sort of as it relates to responsible gaming. I'm hearing different things at the legislative level as we gear up for next sessions. This is obviously becoming a very hot topic amongst lawmakers. We always know that this is a conversation that's going to be in the forefront. Lawmakers want to know that folks are protected in their state if they're passing legislation as it relates to responsible gaming. And, you know, I was hoping you could give the audience just maybe sort of kind of a brief background, where you're coming from, some of the things we're looking at, and then we'll jump into some questions. So fire away.
Sure. Yeah, thanks, B&B. Long time fan. glad to be on the pod.
We pay you to say that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I want my check. I've been kicking around the gambling field for about 30 years now. 3 years as director of research at the AGA, and then 27 years as executive director at NCBG. And in January, I launched my own firm, Safer Gambling Strategies. So I'm concentrating again as a consultant on RG and PG issues. But yeah, Brant, to your point, I do think there's been a tipping point when it comes to responsible gambling. And I would say that there's more optimism than ever, especially in the online space. But then there's a lot of public skepticism. So I think it's a really weird balance. People that know, like the three of us, I would say, you know, I'm very optimistic about the power of technology to moderate risky gambling behavior, you know, to detect it, to inform, to educate. Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff going out there that we can talk about. But I don't think that same optimism is shared by the general public and perhaps legislators and media. And so I think there's a real disconnect there. And again, I think that's what we're trying to solve for.
You know, Keith, I think you bring up very valid points. And obviously, we're seeing technology and that debate come into this conversation more and more of, you know, what's good, what's bad, how does it work? And it's an education phase. Just like it is on the industry, as you've seen over the last 30 years during your career, as I've known you for a good chunk of that, I won't say how many, but way too many years along the way. We both started when we were five along the way. But, you know, as we're heading into, you know, everybody says, oh, this is the slow time. But as we're sitting here trying to start messaging this, as we're heading into legislative sessions in January, what are some of the key things you think we need to articulate as an industry to try to make this a much more conversational issue as opposed to, oh, here's this big issue I don't understand, or it's too complex for me to understand.
Right. That's a great point, Brendan, because I think a lot of this stuff is pretty in the weeds. It's pretty detailed. I think what we need to start, there's two things I would say. One is that the old days of state-specific conversations, I think, are kind of starting to pass us by. We need to solve on a national level, if not, even bigger than that, a global level. And so things like, I'm working with IDPAIR, that the National Voluntary Self-Exclusion Program takes all these existing self-exclusion siloed programs and just allows a common app so you can exclude, yourselves from all the participating jurisdictions, one-stop shopping, right? Those are the kinds of discussions we need to start having. I think legislators can get their hands around, yes, I've got my state list and I've got whatever requirements are, for my retail casinos or my, this or my lottery, but you can have a common application. It's done easily online and then allows it makes a consumer-centric approach to responsible gambling. So that's one thing I would say. We need to get away from the state-specific stuff and think about more national solutions. But that national solution is not national regulation. I want to be very clear. I'm talking about harmonizing existing state programs and issues. And then the second thing again is to better balance the technology. And so I think right now, and I think to be fair, the operators and some of the folks I represent are really pushing the power of technology to maximize revenue. That's fine. That's their job. Regulators and legislators now have to really get engaged in this conversation and think about how to use technology to minimize harm at the same time and create a better balance. And again, I think those are easily digestible points that the legislators and the press, the public, hopefully can digest. We've learned a lot in these past 30 years. We can do this better. And I think those are two ways to really have that conversation on the RG side at the legislative level.
That's really important, and appreciate you pointing that out. I wanted to focus. I wanted to get your thoughts on something, and I'm just going to forgive me because I need to read this because I don't want to get it wrong. I recently see that there's a brand new study out from NCPG, and it's what they're calling the National Survey on Gambling Attitudes and Gambling Experiences 3.0. And to your point, I think which is really interesting, they note here that problem gaming rates have decreased to pre-pandemic levels. Point being, levels of problematic play have declined, returning to the levels seen in 2018. And the study basically concludes that this may have been a result of the pandemic. Perhaps also, it mentions that operators and the tools that are being provided are actually working. And I think that
That's right.
this is interesting. I wanted to get some of your thoughts on that.
Oh, I think it's great news. These are always studies, they're always point in time, but people have to remember that the national the Engage survey started in 2018. So you've got a 2018 sample, a 2021 sample, and now a 2024 sample that's just being released here in 2025. And so but they're big. There's thousands of people nationwide. And when you look at the state samples, you're getting about 25,000 to 27,000 respondents. So these are very powerful studies. Most of the studies that you talk about, a couple hundred people here, maybe 1,000 people there, most of them are not statistically significant at the state level. This Engage is. And so the findings are very, very positive. There's still a lot of risk there. And increasingly, one of the things when you dig into the study, Brent, I think you're right. The overall rate seems to have, kind of stabilized a little bit. It's still higher than it was in 2018, of course.
Sure, of
But
course.
where you look at where the growth of risk is, it's among this young male online sports betting population. So that's where probably in 2021, I think one of my assumptions is that what we're seeing is this effect of a ton of these young male online sports bettors that jumped into this, during the pandemic because they were bored, they were stressed, they were lonely, and some of those folks, really developed, some serious problems, but they also, are starting to moderate. And again, as you say, the RG tools are really, I think there's some success there. So I think it's great. There's still problems. No one should say, okay, we're done now. Let's pack up and go home. Of course,
Can't raise the job well done flag,
yeah,
right?
exactly. No banners. Yeah. We're not going to hang a banner
We're not
yet.
putting the banner on the side of the ship.
Not
Yeah.
yet,
Mission
not yet.
accomplished.
No, we're not there.
But I think everybody, and especially, people that are concerned about gambling should celebrate results like these rather than trying to pick holes in them. And because there's lots of caveats, this is always, blah, 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 blah. You could always do more research, but any sign that problems are going down, we should all be pretty happy about.
Keith, I agree with you that we need to celebrate those things, but I want to go back to something you said earlier, before Brant went into that survey and talking about the federalization of gaming and how using tools like self-exclusion are important. But obviously we've seen a lot of people come in, as I always like to refer to them, the British invasion that thinks they want to tell us
Yes.
again how we should do stuff. As I always eloquently said, I think we showed that when we dumped a bunch of tea in a harbor, some 200 some odd years ago. In fact, coming up on 250 this next summer. What's the difference between what we need to do versus what some of these naysayers that don't understand our industry, that don't understand how this actually works, as somebody that's a veteran for 30 years, how do we need to look at it from the continued state level approach?
I think that's I think harmonization is a big word for me, because rather because I think you can look at things in a national scope, but still respect state sovereignty and tribal sovereignty. Let's not forget the tribal sovereignty. That's extremely important. And so I look at this a lot like rather than ever talking about if there will be a federal gambling commission, which I think is extraordinarily unlikely in the United States for all sorts of, as you say, political, historic, legislative reasons, constitutional reasons, quite frankly. I think we can look at better harmonizing all these existing state and tribal regulations to find a common standard. So when I talk about when I look at this, I think the experience with alcohol and the minimum age to drink is a great example. So there is no federal age to drink. There is a lot of pressure from the federal government to say all states should harmonize their individual state laws to 21, and they've got a big club. They can leverage highway funding. Right, we could do the same thing. We could say, hey, the goal is for every state, every tribe to take their minimum age up to 21. Lottery, racing, online casino, I don't care. And do it voluntarily. Let's get the industry behind this. Let's just say, look, we're going to try and find a national consensus minimum age. It's not going to be a national regulation. There's not going to be a federal gambling commission doing that. It's going to be states finally getting together and saying, we have to look at this as a national level issue. It's crazy that there's a couple hundred jurisdictions, many of which have different ages. Here in the DMV, you can bet sports at 18 in DC. I can cross the river, and a mile later, I can't bet sports till I'm 21. Same operator, same advertising market, same people. I mean, I cross into DC, a couple times a day to have lunch and dinner and meet with people. And I have to go back and forth. 18 good, 18 bad, 18 good, 18 bad. And I think. So I think it's hard for operators. It's really bad for consumers. But I think to your point, Brendan, it shows if we as the industry can't get our act together and start pushing to just on some basic common sense thing, trying to get each state and each tribe to harmonize, we are inviting a national, right? We're inviting, I'm sorry, not a national, we're inviting a federal overreach. So again, I think that window is closing. I think it would be hard, but I think you look at a lot of bills like the Safe Bet Act. It's not impossible to think someone's not going to try and do this. So that's what I would say to you. I think, and you and I have kind of agreed to disagree a lot on the nationalization of gambling. It is still state by state, it's still tribe by tribe, but there's no reason why states and tribes can't agree. Maybe it's a compact. It's like sharing poker data. Let's all agree just to hit 21 as a minimum age. That is going to solve so many problems for operators, consumers, and regulators. And it's maybe perhaps for all of our clients, it's going to prevent or help prevent federal oversight and overreach.
I remember growing up in Michigan, it was real easy to just jump on I-94 and go over into Windsor when I turned
Sure.
18. And we spent a lot of time doing that. I learned a lot about
Shocking,
gambling.
Mr. Iden. You did that? I never would have guessed
I spent a lot of time learning about
that.
gambling over there and that our friends to the north,
On the ground
yeah.
experience. Yeah.
Well, Keith, I've got one that I sort of hear out there on the trail a lot with lawmakers that I wanted to pick your brain about. And that's specific to this argument that illegal gambling is sort of played out, right? And specifically I want to delve into that. When I go out there and I talk to lawmakers and I say, look, the more restrictions and the harder you make this, and if you don't legalize, you've got folks that don't have any protections in the illegal market. You've got all these players playing in the illegal market. The onus is on you as the lawmaker to help your state citizens and create and put some regulation around this. And
Yes.
I read in the media and I see some of this other stuff and they're like, oh, operators keep saying illegal market and that story's played out. No one believes that anymore, that there's this illegal market, the boogeyman, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think? Does it still resonate? Is it still true? I mean, I think it is. Maybe I'm wrong, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right. But the evidence and that new report from Campaign for Fair Gambling was fascinating. Whether or not you agree that there's $67 billion in illegal online offshore gaming every year, and I think there's some reason to maybe be skeptical of those figures. But let's cut it in half. $33 billion in illegal offshore revenue. That's still pretty significant. But yeah, no. So that there's a lot of studies out there that show that the illegal market is significant. And when you talk to people with gambling problems, they report that it's they are preyed upon by illegal offshore operators. And I do think I would say sometimes it is a little bit of a boogeyman, because I think you have to caveat that any regulation is going to be higher standard, and you're going to pay taxes in a legal regulated market that you won't pay illegal offshore. So there's no way, there's no way that the competition can ever be even. Someone in Uzbekistan can always do less than your least regulated market. But that said, when you have a minimum standard, it's on the operators to, again, all get together and try to provide a consistent minimum standard. One of the big reasons we keep having this discussion, Brent, is because, states have not done a good job at being consistent. And so it makes it pretty easy. There's this kind of sliding scale. There's New Jersey and there's Ohio. Then, it starts to dwindle. If you look at the work NCPG did around their internet responsible gambling standards, the majority of states meet less than half of NCPG's internet responsible gambling standards. That would be one easy area. If you're the industry and you want to make an argument that the offshore is bad, you should be able to say this is why all of our jurisdictions are good. So that's one point. But yes, offshore is a big thing. There's a lot of leakage there. And I do think a legal regulated space that fully embraces online responsible gambling tools makes that argument a lot stronger. And then the last piece of this sprint, I would say, is that we're relying too much on operators who have some enlightened self-interest in this area to carry this argument forward. We need to be talking to regulators and legislators. And that recent letter by the 50 states' attorneys general was a huge step in this direction, but it needs to go broader. We need to educate players. Here's all the reasons why you shouldn't play with the illegal offshore market. And PS, one of those big reasons is that there's a lack of responsible gambling controls. There's a lack of programs and support. This money's not going in to help you if you may, if someone may have a problem. I mean, there's hundreds of reasons why they shouldn't play offshore, but it's a consumer education part. That's the big part that's missing. And again, I'm an optimist. I think there's an enormous opportunity for every stakeholder to get together and say, nobody should play offshore. Here's all the reasons why. Here's from the attorneys generals to the operators to regulators to legislators, advocacy groups. NCPG could be part of that. There's so much we can do together to help people distinguish. Because you probably just saw that recent survey coming out of Alabama showed 60% of undergraduates, reported they bet sports online. Some of that may be this confusion. Maybe they think DFS 2.0 is legal or regulated. Some of it they're probably going offshore. Some of it is, some of this other stuff. But that is 60% of college students who are grievously misinformed about the legality of what they're doing. And whether they're willfully ignorant or just ignorant, doesn't matter. Those are the folks who need to be educating. And operators can't even legal regulated operators aren't really even active in Alabama. Right. So you
Not at
can't
all.
just
No,
rely on
no, no.
them.
Legal
Yeah,
regulated
by
operators are not active.
definition.
Drink.
Yeah. So I think there's an opportunity, but we have to look at this a lot like alcohol. Again, we don't just rely on Anheuser-Busch to say don't drive drunk. They do, that's good, but it's got to be, the faith community, schools, that's where we really need to be doing work to make sure the general public knows, hey, if you're betting sports online in Alabama, you're not
It's illegal.
engaging
You're
it, right?
creating a, it's a crime. Yeah, you
Yeah,
shouldn't be doing it.
you should be doing that. And again, there's always gonna be some people that are gonna shift offshore for various reasons, but we can do a much better job on both sides, on education and on regulation.
Well, Keith, we're running out of time
Yeah,
here.
sorry, that was a long.
We no, it's all good. Well, and the other thing I was going to add to that is it's not just offshore at this point. We've got the social guys and everything else that think they're legal too. That whether it be Alabama or anywhere else, but we'll leave that for a different episode, and all the cease and desist letters against those guys
That's right.
along the way. But as we're closing out today's show, what's sort of the one thing you'd like to leave guests with where we need to go, whether it be through research or collaboration, as we continue to, I'll use your language, of harmonize the industry.
Transparency of data sharing. There's a lot that operators know about the behavior of their players. They hold in some ways the keys to the kingdom for responsible gambling. They can tell us who's gambling, when, how much. They don't know the why, and that's a big part of it, because data alone is not going to diagnose somebody with a problem. But by sharing these data sets, anonymized, even not even operator specific, but pooling that data, pulling billions and billions of records, is going to help everybody else figure out, A, if their responsible gambling programs are working, B, where the risk is, and C, how to better minimize that risk. But right now, except in limited circumstances, that data is being held and it's not being shared. And so, in some ways, I don't want to say operators have themselves to blame, but by publicly revealing a lot of this information, warts and all, you're going to get to an area where people start to trust you again. Because right now, I think there is no trust amongst from the general public, from legislators and regulators of the industry, and especially the online industry, because they could really help everybody. They could demystify this. There's so many myths around there. They could bust so many of those myths by sharing these huge swaths of anonymized data. And I think the fact that they're reluctant to just creates that skepticism that we've been talking about. And until you address that skepticism, I think it's going to be a hard road on the legislative side.
Keith, thank you so much for joining us. We greatly appreciate it. We've covered transparency, RG.
That's
We
right.
got history from Brendan Bussman throwing tea in the harbor. We got it all on this episode. So
Love
thank
it.
you very much. This has been another episode of the World Series of Politics podcast with your hosts, Miranda Iden and Brendan Bussman. We'll see you on down the road.
Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the World Series of Politics podcast with Brendan Bussman and Brent Iden. We'll be back at the starting line very soon. This has been an IGB production. For the latest news, views, analysis, and data on the global gaming industry, head to igamingbusiness.com.